It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Hi, this is James Mercer from The Shins.
This is Shirley Manson.
This is Lo Tullhurst, co-founder of The Cure.
This is Huey Lewis giving you the story behind the song.
The Story Behind the Song is back with an exciting second season. We peel back the layers on music's most iconic hits with legendary artists like The Killers, Heart, The B-52s, Violent Femmes, Jewel, Huey Lewis, Modern English, and more. To keep the music flowing, we'll be sprinkling in classic episodes from our archives between each new one. So check out The Story Behind the Song wherever you get your podcast.
Hey there, it's Kyle Meredith. We're taking a couple weeks off here from the Kyle Meredith With podcast, but I wanted to thank you for listening in this year by sharing some of our favorite interviews from 2023. We'll be back with brand new interviews on January 8th. But for now, here's my interview with Jeff Ament from Pearl Jam.
Well, next year, Stone and I should do it together because I think it'll be our 40th year together, so that we can celebrate that.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks as always for making your way here and checking out the series. Of course, I do hope you hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with all the interviews that I put out every single week. 3 brand new interviews every week, new and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, to keep you up to date on your favorite artists and discover some new ones at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, WFPK.org, NPR.org, YouTube for the video versions, or again, anywhere you get your podcasts from, subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Recent guests have included Louise Post of Veruca Salt, actor Jason Scott Lee to talk about the 30th anniversary of Bruce Lee, Dragon, the Bruce Lee story. I had the cast of Outlander, Esty Haim of Haim. We had the band Daughter. We talked about the movie Extraction 2 with Golshifteh Farahani and Sam Hargrave. Country artist Carly Pierce, Josh Homme of Queens of the Stone Age, Dave Davies of The Kinks, the band Inhaler, and Stone Gossard of Pearl Jam. Just a few of the recent guests we've had here on the Kyle Meredith With podcast. And speaking of Pearl Jam, I got another one today, talking with bassist Jeff Ament. Jeff's back with a new side project called Deaf Charlie. And this is the side project. It's a collaboration, actually, with former Fits and the Tantrums drummer John Wicks. So they've got their debut album called Catastrophic Metamorphic. And this comes on the heel of a few years they've been releasing kind of one-off singles. So finally getting together and putting a whole record out. So we're going to talk about their origin story. We're going to hear all about that, finding their sound. And we'll get some of the stories behind several of the songs. And of course, we're also going to talk about some Pearl Jam. Jeff's going to give us the updates on the next PJ album, how advice from Neil Young gave them back in the day is applied to the moment they're in now, and when that album might make its way out. It's also the 20th anniversary year of my favorite Pearl Jam record, Yield, so we're going to talk about that as well. But let's start again with the record Catastrophic Metamorphic and the band Deaf Charlie. It's Kyle Meredith with Jeff Ament of Pearl Jam.
What's going on, Kyle?
It's great to see you again, man.
Yeah, good to see you.
And we were just talking off camera here. Sort of a busy little time for you because Deaf Charlie now, which has sort of been, I guess, this, you know, you never know what to call a side project, but it's outside of Pearl Jam. So it's another project. But this is something you kind of been teasing for a couple years here with some singles. But now we get the official album, right?
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, when John and I started playing together, there was never really an intention to make a record or whatever. And then when the pandemic hit, we just kind of kept putting one foot in front of the other. I would write a couple songs and I would pass them his way and he would take them into his laboratory and, you know, tear them apart and put them back together again. And and then it started to just be this fun thing, sort of almost like daring each other to go farther, you know, further with this stuff, just to see where we end up. And it was really fun. It was, you know, I don't think we knew we had an album until we were a few months into it, but it was creative in sort of a really truly intensive collaborative way, because we didn't have anything else going on. You know, there was no hope of our big bands of playing shows at that time. So,
and for people that don't know, you know, John, that you're talking about, we're talking about John Wicks, and it's, I have to remember how to say his name with the plural part, otherwise you get the movie thing. But but you know, so he was part of Fits and the Tantrums, and so how did you guys hook up to begin with?
Well, he originally worked at a coffee shop in Lower Queen Anne that one of my best friends Curtis worked at, and there was like a 2 or 3 year period where if I was in town, I went to that coffee shop every day. And so I got to know him a little bit then. And then we were never like friends. We were just acquaintances. And then there's a little gym here in town, and they had a Christmas party, and he walked up and he goes, "You remember me?" And I was like, "I do. And I can't remember your name." And he goes, "I'm John Wicks. I'm good friends with Curtis, blah, 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 blah." And I was like, "Oh, yeah, yeah." And I didn't even know that he was a musician. I think he had just joined Fits and the Tantrums maybe a year before that, and made a record with him. And then we just sort of stayed in touch over the, every once in a while he would play like a jazz improv show. And that was when I really he was incredible in Fits in the Tantrums, sort of doing that R&B thing. But then I saw him like do this jazz improv stuff, and it was just like mind blowing how good he was, and like how great of a listener and the deep bag of chops that he has. And at that time I knew he would be fun to play with. I didn't know if it would be, you know, creative. I didn't think we'd write songs together or whatever. But he brings a whole different bag to the studio mode. And so it's been really super fun.
Yeah, we got those first two tracks, you know, that you guys have put out so far, which Something Real, which is like epic. And it's a fun little epic song. I mean, it's one of my favorite things that you guys. And then there's the, what is it, the cover, right?
Well, no, there's Sitting Around at Home, which is a Buzzcocks.
Buzzcocks. So that's, I mean, what does that just set the sort of sound for the whole thing?
Kinda. I mean, you know, we did a song. There was a song called "Comeback Player of the Year" that we did like 4 or 5 years ago when Dow, who owned the coffee shop that he worked at, who was one of my good friends, he passed away, and I wrote the song. And when I played it for John, he's like, "Man, I have some drum ideas." And so, in Tom Waits fashion, I was like, "What, you don't like my drums?" But he came up and he totally made the song like a legit song with just the way that he layered drums onto that thing. And that was the first time that I saw him sort of work in a studio setting. And I was like, wow, he would be really fun to make a record with at some point, because it was unorthodox. His, you know, kind of the way that he hears stuff is super unorthodox and in a really great way. And it's that's sort of how the record making went with him, was he would come back with something that would kind of blow my mind. And it would be, he would hear something, you know, in these songs that I was giving him that I never, ever would have heard in a million years. And so that part's always, you know, if you're open to it, if you're open to somebody interpreting your stuff, it's like, it's the best part of playing music, when you trust each other collaboratively and just go down some paths that are uncomfortable. And, you know, like, yeah, I mean, it might take you a couple of weeks to wrap your head around it. And there were a few things that we went all the way out and brought it halfway back, but, you know, there's a handful of these things that we went all the way in with it. And those are kind of the most satisfying tracks, like a year or two later. So,
and we'll be right back right after this.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples. I live in Kentucky, in the Midwest, and allergies, yeah, I suffer. When I say I suffer from allergies, I suffer from allergies.
And around here, everyone I know deals with allergies to some degree. And for a long time, I thought it was just something that I would have to live with, which is a real problem for anything, but especially when you're a radio host. It affects my voice, it affects my mood, it affects everything. And I feel like I've tried all the medicines. Some of them work better than others, but there's never a perfect one out there, especially because some of them take forever to actually work and some of them don't work at all. And then there's Astepro, the fastest solution to nasal allergy symptoms. It's what I use now, and it's definitely changed my life. Astepro is the first of its kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astepro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astepro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing. With all the pollen in the air, with all the dust around the corners of the house, even with the allergies I have from my dog, Astepro has been the nasal spray that has helped me with all of my allergies. And it can help you too. Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astepro. Go to AstaproAllergy.com for a discount so you can Astepro and go today. AstePro Allergy.com. That's AstePro Allergy.com. Astepro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Jeff Immense.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely sounds different than any project you've been a part of. And it's fun because at times it's like, it's messy, but it doesn't feel like it's going to fall apart. And then there's the electronics part of it that comes in, you know, that I'm not quite used to hearing, what, you know, something like that you're a part of. Yeah. What, so I don't, and maybe that's just a part of your process, as you're saying. It sounds like that, you know, to a certain point you write it and then he starts to maybe construct and deconstruct it. But does that change how you then started to write the song? Did you find that it was sort of reciprocal like that?
I think the thing that got retained in a lot of this stuff is like almost all the choruses are sort of like what went down when I put them down. And often what he was messing with was just things rhythmically, and in particular in the verses, in the outros, or he might say like, you know, this thing needs a better bridge, or, you know, sort of challenging me to, like, you know, rise to the occasion. And, you know, there was a lot of times when I record vocals, like there's a lot of tracks and harmonies and, you know, high stuff. And he gravitated like something real. He kept just saying over and over for months, like, you got to just go with the falsetto on that song. And I was like, man, I don't know. That's like, that's pretty naked. That, you know, that thing sticking out there is like, you know, there's a vulnerability there, you know, having that voice out there. And he just kept saying it. And so I finally kind of started to believe it. And that's a pretty powerful thing when you have, you know, he's a real musician guy. So, you know, he was sort of bolstering my confidence. And I think that allowed me to sort of take chances vocally, you know, that I probably wouldn't normally have taken just on my own without somebody there saying like, that's a cool part of your voice. Like, use that more. And it's the weird side of it, which I appreciate, you know, like I think when I hear other people doing weird stuff, like I always kind of gravitate towards that stuff, especially when it's like believable, you know. It's like, because people are weird. So you want to hear real stuff that's weird, you know?
I mean, I've always said my favorite Pearl Jam songs just happen to be the weird songs. You know, when you guys do the weird stuff, that's what I love.
I think me too. I think whenever, if I've had a little part in writing any of those weird songs, that's always like the home run for me. It's like, fuck, man, we got that song on a record. Like, that's so awesome, you know? So
playing, of course, I'll get into it later, but, you know, with Yield doing the 25th anniversary, I was playing Push Me, Pull Me the other day for my wife. And I don't know, she hears the stuff around. I don't know if she ever paid attention to it. And she was just like, what is this? You know, and I was like, oh, yeah, no, this is where they have a lot of fun. And, you know, Happy When I'm Crying, I think, was the other part of that whole scenario. And yeah. You got weirder than that too, but that was a great example, you know, just kind of pulling that stuff out.
Yeah.
And those moments, as we're saying, you know, what, losing my mind. So what am I hearing at the beginning of that track? Is that a sample? Is that you guys talking?
I'm trying to think. Losing my, just the, no, that's Marlon. That's just Marlon like riffing. So, John came to me and said, "Hey man, I got this friend. He's a comedian in LA who's got an amazing voice, and I've always wanted to do a project with him." And he goes, "If you hear something," I said, "Well," and we were working on something real at the time. I said, "Well, you should just throw him that track and see what he does to it." And it was interesting enough where when we were working on Lose My Mind and Preamble, I could hear his voice, you know, doing those parts. And so it really sort of, it makes you listen to the song in a different way, the way that he presents it. And so he sort of inhabited this character in the verses of that song. So the beginning of that track and the verses is, you know, he's a character, you know, in the, you know, from the newscast that I'm watching, that's making me feel like I'm losing my mind. He's that guy. He's like, it's, you know, I think partly influenced by, you know, the George Floyd incident and, you know, just all the overt racism, you know, with our law enforcement and he just went all the way with it. And it makes the track for me. So
it reminded me, outside of the specific context of what you're talking about, it reminded me of like a tape, a cassette somebody would have passed to me in the late 80s or early 90s, you know, and when sampling, you know, because it did, yeah. I couldn't tell it, like, it felt like that. It felt a little bit like, am I supposed to be hearing this, you know?
And all of his tracks, he has like a little road mic or something, but it's all, he recorded all that stuff on his phone. So it's, I think the fact, you know, we ended up treating his voice sort of to emulate really what happened, you know, he was hearing these tracks in his headphones and he's like singing into his phone essentially. And then John would kind of chop that stuff up and often he would send two or three really different versions of the tracks. And so you could sort of, it's almost like there's multiple people talking to each other, or almost like a crazy person talking to themselves or something. So, I mean, hopefully if we do more of this stuff, like Marlon's on everything, because he really adds a, you know, he really adds a dynamic that the stuff needed. So.
Okay. Almost like in that negative land space. I think that's what I was trying to say a minute ago. You know, that kind of stuff. I don't know if I'm saying this right. Who is a Ched man?
So Ched man is, I built a skate park. We built the skate park on the Blackfeet Reservation maybe 8 years ago. And the second year there was a little bit of graffiti on one of the bowls and it said Ched man. So I asked one of the kids that I knew, I was like, "Hey man, who's Ched man?" And he got in this whispered tone. He's like, "Ched man's the guy with the drugs, the bad drugs." And the way that he said it, like, it was like really spooky. I just conjured up this character that, you know, so the Ched man is almost like a boogeyman or something. He's also like ruining people's lives. And then just going back and going like, how did the Ched man become the Ched man? And then really it's about like the, you know, the systemic annihilation of native peoples, you know, that was what I came up with. So the verses are sort of these simplified, it's a simplified version of, you know, sort of what happened when after Lewis and Clark came out and then they built the railroad tracks and the trains started coming out and basically bringing like disease and killing off the bison and like basically ruining, you know, this way of life that these people had for 10,000 years. So, but it all started with that kid whispering to me, like, you know, he's the boogeyman. And so I really wanted those choruses to sound like super scary. So that was the,
I love how that's so specific and so historic and at that's, you know, at the same time. And, you know, and even on the surface, it's a great punk rock track on top of that.
Yeah, for sure. And John made that, like, my original drums were all sort of like double time, the whole song. And he sort of, it's double time, then it goes into the chorus and it just sinks down into this halftime heavy thing and it makes it so much darker. So that was, again, another instance of John just hearing it in a different way and really sort of, you know, delivering the message through his drum part. Cool.
And you got that, and you got tracks like Watching the Sun, which almost has like a 60s vibe to my ears, and then Too Great, which might be my favorite. I mean, it's I know Losing My Mind comes out and that's like the first single I hear Too Great, and I'm like, that's the one I want to play on the radio. You know, that's like some good stuff. And I'm not going to go through it track by track, I guess what I'm saying, because I could.
Yeah.
Because every single song on here is so good and so unique. What else did I write down? What are you saying or at the end of We Are Doing It?
It's basically German for like we don't know it, but we're doing it. And it's sort of like watching the train wreck of, you know, we have all this scientific knowledge about what's going on with the environment, but we can't stop capitalism from, it's just like, hey man, we got to make that dollar tomorrow. So I know like all of Canada is burning down right now, but keep those oil pipelines full, keep them cranking, keep the coal. There's more coal going through, you know, Missoula, Montana right now than there ever has been. And it's like, you know, there's I think one of the biggest, if not the biggest, coal pit in North America, you know, shipping coal to China, like twice as much as we were 5 years ago. And so it's like, you're just surrounded by you're just witnessing like this insanity. Like, and so it's like, you know, it's like I over and over, you're just saying like, yeah, we deserve it. Like whatever's coming our way, we deserve it. Cause we've had every opportunity to like do something about it. And I'm as guilty as the next person. But the people in power and the people that are running the big corporations they're going to go to a deeper circle of hell than me. So.
Yeah. You know, in Kentucky, of course, we got McConnell here. And you have these people that drive around with the license plates that say Friends of Coal. Like, why? Because surely you do know. They know. I think they know. And those are the cars. Yeah.
It's just, I think it becomes this thing where I think, and both sides are probably a little bit guilty of it, but where it's like, nobody's going to tell me what to think. And that's what my grandpa did. But whatever, you know, whatever. But like, we have all this, you know, new green technology where, I mean, even if it costs twice as much right now, like, why wouldn't we embrace it? I mean, it's, you know, I mean, New York City just had like, I mean, you might have even gotten some of the smoke in Kentucky.
We did. Sure. Like, we actually did. Yeah.
But that's the new norm for us here in the West. I mean, like Montana, we have our own years where we have bad fires, but last 10 years, we haven't had that many fires here, but because the fires are so bad in Canada or in Northern California, or it just all comes to the Valley. And what used to be the best month of the summer, August, is now the worst month. So the worst month of the year. And so that's the part where you're just like, come on, man. Like we've been reminded for 20 solid years that there's some crazy stuff going on. This isn't just like a, you know, a blip in the, you know, whatever their two scientists are telling them, that it's, you know, this is just part of the ebb and flow of, you know, the heating up of the planet or whatever, but we deserve it.
Yeah. Right. Cause that's reminding me, you know, I was earlier mentioned it was Yield and it's the 25th anniversary. So of course I've had that on my mind when that came out. And I don't remember if you were part of it. Maybe it was you. I think it was you, maybe Ed as well, but you mentioned the book Ishmael by Daniel Quinn that you all had been reading that at the time, which turned me onto it. That's when I found out about it. I ended up reading while Quinn was alive. I read all of his books. And it is, because that should have changed me. And it did in some ways, it, you know, because I was a teenager. And so it did put my mind I'm agreeing with you on the we deserve it because I fucking deserve it. You know, I was even like given that tool and somehow, but I do, I put my hope in the people that I vote for, that they're going to fix me for me. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I do think that if our leaders, and we should consider ourselves to be leaders too. But you sort of hope that somebody's going to come up with, a version of capitalism that's going to make it okay to do the right thing. You know, like it's like, I mean, that's been what they've been talking about for 10 or 15 years. Like, how do we make this green technology, like, make money, you know? And it's like, and it's the question that you hear about homelessness. They're like, well, if people could figure out how to make money off homelessness, like we would have cured it a long time ago. And so, but it's just, it's brutally sad that like capitalism always wins no matter what. And we fight, you know, we fight it within the band where we talk a lot about, it's like, man, like at the beginning, we were just doing our thing. We were just making art. So let's focus on the making art part of it. And then if the commerce comes around the backside of it, great. And if it doesn't, then you just keep making your art. And like Neil Young told us 25 years ago, like, that's going to come and go. You're going to have high points and low points, and you got to just keep doing your thing. You just got to keep following your muse, and you got to keep making your art. And so you wish that everybody in their own lives could just afford to do that. You could just, like, you know, do your thing, and it's the right thing. You're doing the right thing, and you're not, like, you know, throwing away like a box full of like plastic containers every week from your blueberries and your whatever. It's like, and then finding out years later, like, oh yeah, that stuff just usually ends up in the garbage. That stuff doesn't get recycled. And you're just like, oh my God, like we're all going to hell, like for our part in this. So
somehow that album, with everything that we've been talking about, I'm talking about the Depp Charlie record, ends up being a fun record.
that's all John Wicks, man. He's like the Mr. Optimist, Mr. PMA. Drums, and it's like you instantly feel better, so it's good.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Jeff Immense of Pearl Jam.
You know, since I've kind of hit back and forth on it, I will touch into PJ Land for a second here, because well, first off, you know, I was talking with Stone. Stone was on here just a week or two ago. And he kind of said that, oh, we think we're getting to the finish line on this new record. Speaking of continuing to do your art, which, you know, is great news. No timeline, obviously, what that means. But you know, most of the time when you ask an artist the question at this point, what does a record sound like? They can't tell you anyway. They're like, I don't know. We're too far in it. What I think I'd be more inclined to ask you, if it's possible, is then what is defining this era? Do you think, for what you all might be writing about?
Well, I mean, you know, we've talked a lot about in the last 3 or 4 years is like how we've sort of earned the right to like do whatever the fuck we want to right now. And so why wouldn't we like go all the way with that? And you know, like, you know, saying like, you know, everybody make a list of the 10, you know, things that you want to do in this band before we're done, you know, like where, you know, where's the city that you've never played, or where's the venue you want to go back to, or what's the kind of song you want to write, or what's the topic that you want to, or what's the cause you want to get behind within the context of the band. And I, you know, those are sort of the things I talk about. So it's like, it feels like we're sort of at this point where we should be able to turn like a big corner. We've earned the right to sort of like, you know, and that's tough because there's five of us that are, you know, pulling the cart. And so sometimes you end up pulling the cart in opposite directions, but it's like just embracing all of that, embracing everybody's ideas and everybody's hopes and dreams and wishes and, styles. And and you know, we have this amazing community as a band, and the families within the band and the people that we work with and the people that have worked with us for like 32 years in some cases. I mean, it's all working like we've, it's taken us this long for it to work this efficiently. It's like we should just be like killing it right now, you know, like in every way. And so I think that's what we hope for musically. I think we want to turn the corner, and I think we want to access all the best parts of each other, and we want to flourish within that. We just want to support the best parts of each other, so we consequently make the best music. I think that's how it worked.
Nobody wants to make bad music.
Yeah. but also there's a lot of ego involved, and if somebody feels like they're working harder than the other person, or you know, whatever the stuff is. But it's like, if you can just leave that stuff behind and focus on how do we support each other so each person like brings the best to the song we're working on right now. And and I think that's what we're trying to do. It's sort of like, you know, the stuff we've been doing the last couple of years, it sort of feels like we've hit on that in a few instances. I think I heard Stone thought that the record was done, but I know for a fact that it's not. I don't think all the songs are done. We don't.
Because, you know, and to be fair, he didn't tell me it was done. He said, I think we're getting close to the finish line.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the hardest part of making the record a lot of times is figuring out which songs go on the record, and do we need to record another song, and what's the artwork, and what's the title, and what's the all that stuff. And I know for a fact right now everybody wants the summer off, because last summer was a bit of a grind. For me, like in a week, I'm shutting everything off. So, and I know at that point there's the record's still not done. So come September, we're still going to be like, we're going to pick up those, you know, the questions we have about where are we at and whatever. We'll ask those questions again, and then we'll revisit them. But, I think everybody hopes that we have a record out next year. I mean, that would be, you know, if we have a record out next year, that means we'll probably play a few more shows. And I think there's a couple places we haven't played in quite a while. So I think we have stuff penciled in.
I just love that there's still a fire there with you guys. And we get that, you know, when we talk about new records, that excitement is still there. It's interesting to me. You put however many of you all are in the band these days, like the Foo Fighters, I've lost track of how many members of Pearl Jam there are at the moment. But when you have the core of you all who's been, you know, you have, you know, what do you say? Like, you know, you're all ingredients in the stew. And when you put you all in there, that's the stew you get. And at this point, how hard is it to make a new stew? Do you get what I'm saying? Like, how do you change the taste of that soup if you want to?
Well, you know what it takes is it takes one person to fucking destroy their part of the song that you're working on. If somebody like raises the level to this thing where you're going like, oh my God, like that Mac Cameron beat is like, you know, that's like one of the best Mac Cameron beats I've ever heard. Everybody has to rise up to that level and match that energy. And that's how you change the stew. That's how you like, because a lot of times you'll end up playing something that you didn't know you had in you or Ed writes this incredible lyric, or Stone comes up with this groove. It's like when those things happen and you feel like I have to do whatever I can to like make this song better. And that's the exciting thing about being in the band. It was like if all five of us are super engaged, everybody's in the room, like really paying attention and their phones are off and whatever. It's like, there's a potential for somebody to come up with something that makes everybody else kind of raise the level. I think we've been doing a little bit of that in the last, you know, this last year and a half of these sessions that we've had. I think there's some really special stuff happening. And maybe it's because I'm so close to it, but I just don't know what it is. I don't know what it is right now. It's like, and so it doesn't feel like a record yet to me. It doesn't, it doesn't feel as close as Mike to Stone. And
do you at least got some weird stuff in there as we talk about the weird stuff?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think we all like have, you know, again, we all have those hopes and dreams for what we think like the, you know, a Pearl Jam song, a new Pearl Jam song would be. And I think, you know, hopefully at the end of this, everybody feels like they're, you know, their character's a part of it. You know, that's kind of where we're at as a band right now. It's like, you just, you know, like I want to hear Mike McCready, like, blow the doors off, you know, and I want to hear, like, you know, a lyric from Ed that makes me laugh or makes me, you know, really sad, you know, really brutally sad. Because he can do that as good as anybody. And I think everybody in the band has like an ability, has like a kind of a superpower, you know, and it's like, how do we pull those superpowers out of each other to write great music? Because it's, again, it's like we've earned it. We've earned the right to like do it however we want to. But I think showing off our strengths isn't the worst way, you know, for this band to operate at this point. So I think we're all better.
I look forward to hearing it, obviously, and I know we're a little ways away from it. And I like the stuff that's sprinkled in the meantime. I mean, Record Store Day, we did get the giveaway live record, and I know I keep coming back to that. I mean, I just, Yield and No Code, the Jack Irons years, and I know it's sort of, I don't know why we define it by Jack Irons, and I know why we define it by Jack Irons, but it's, what I'm saying is, I love his drumming, but those albums are even more than that. Like, they meant so much to me, so that we've sort of been throwing little, you know, the vinyl live albums out from both those records has been really important for me too. You know, keeping us satisfied in the meantime, I guess.
Yeah, and that was a, you know, there was a bit of a second honeymoon that the band was going through at that point. I mean, that was sort of when, you know, Ed kind of challenged everybody to like bring more to the table creatively. And I think we all took it, you know, personally when he asked for help. And I think those records sort of, I mean, for me in particular, Yield has there's a real joyful, you know, creativity going on with the band at that point. And Jack was certainly a big part of it. He was a great drummer in the studio. You know, he really approached every song with a unique, you know, vigor. And that was always really inspirational to witness.
There is a joy, and there's brightness, and there's light, and there's low lights, which is also a great song. And one of these days, I hope to hear what else is in the vault for that era in there as well. Some lost dogs maybe lying around.
Maybe a couple.
In the meantime, yeah, I'll take the tease. That's fine. Def Charlie and this album, Catastrophic Metamorphic.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm always a fan of what you do, and I've told you that before, and I love your other side projects. This is my favorite one.
Awesome.
It really is. This record is so good. So I'm so happy that it's going to get out into the world.
Yeah, we're psyched, and we're so psyched that John talked me into playing a show, which is like got me a little bit nervous, but it's
so Ohana Festival, really, right? You guys are gonna play the festival?
Yeah. And he's sort of put together a really good band, and so I'm really excited about the guys that are gonna be playing with us, and so that part's gonna be fun, and it'll be hot on the heels of a Pearl Jam tour, so I'll have expectations. Yeah, playing with the PJ guys. So,
and when were the rehearsals even happen for that?
they're gonna happen in August, and then those guys will rehearse a little bit when I'm gone, and then I'll come back here for a week, and we'll rehearse for a week. So it's gonna be a stupid amount of work for a show, but sometimes you got to do that. Sometimes you got to like just throw your eggs into one basket. And
yeah, looking forward to that show, man. Yeah. Congrats on the album, Jeff. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks, Kyle. Thanks for having me.
And my thanks to Jeff. Def Charlie's Catastrophic Metamorphic is out now. And you can search deeper into this podcast series, deeper into the Kyle Meredith Wish series. You'll find my previous interviews with Jeff. We did one just, I think, the year before last, and maybe another one the year before that. But there, you can find them all. Deeper into the Kyle Meredith with podcast. Thanks to you for checking out the episode, and please do subscribe so you can keep up with the whole series. Again, you get three new interviews every single week, new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at Spotify and Apple Podcast, at npr.org, wfpk.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from, subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And after that, head over to wfpk.org. That's actually where I do a show Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. You get 4 hours of classic songs and the best in new music. We do anniversary spins, lots of music news, and bonus interviews as well. A recent episode, I played the music of Deltron 3030 and the Talking Heads, XTC, Elvis Costello, Regina Spektor, Blonde Shell, Leonard Cohen, Beck, The Police, Elliot Smith, Bjork, J. Roddy Walston, The Rolling Stones, The DBs, Modest Mouse, Jurassic 5, and had my interview with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Just a recent episode, again, 6 p.m. every weekday at wfpk.org. Consequence, that's where you can go to get more music and film news. And, of course, you can find me on the social media spots, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. All three of them, the address is at Kyle Meredith. And I do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Just like the kids, exactly, or teacher. Yeah, I feel like a teacher this year because rock musicians don't get summers off very often. So I'm happy to go the opposite of all the other bands.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at wfpk.org from Louisville Public Media.